Episode 48, what is it?
49.
49, Ralph's coming up on 50.
49.
Episode 49 tonight. I have a guest, Mr. Scott McLeod from Brockton, Massachusetts.
Sure.
Me and Johnny Bard are going to put him on trial.
Put him on trial. We usually don't do that, but I don't know. It's kind of what the, I think it's what the public wants. They want a public hanging,
yeah.
I think.
We might have
just a perfect candidate tonight.
Justin, everything all right? Seem to be all worked up over there.
Yeah, just adjust some stuff on the fly. You know how we do it.
Yeah.
Justin's the man.
So I'll tell you a little bit about Scott McLeod. I get a call recently. No, I get a message on Instagram. Justin.
Yeah.
You listening?
I'm listening.
All right. I get a message on Instagram and it says, "Hey, Bean Shooter, did I just pronounce the R on Bean Shooter?
Bean Shooter.
It's going to come out that people are going to find out I'm really from Oklahoma.
Come on. Well, they already say you ain't from Boston. I mean, yeah. We find out you are from Tulsa, kid.
Bean Shooter. That's better, right? Bean Shooter. Our boss thinks he knows you, thinks he might have been in Plymouth with you in the 90s.
Early 90s, right?
Early 90s. Well, yeah, we're going to find out what year that was, too.
So I said, "Well, who is your boss?" And they said, "Scott McLeod." And I remembered him right away,
of course.
I actually remembered the story about, if you don't mind me saying, about your father. I said, so when he finally messaged me, I said, "Yeah, I remember you. Your father was a Brockton cop and he committed suicide." Can you even say that? I was right. So I hate it. Yeah, his father, yeah. So, and he goes, "Yeah, correct." And, you know, we laughed.
And we
talked a little bit. Yeah, the stuff I remember, you know, I don't remember the important stuff, but I'll remember like these random facts about people, you know. Johnny, you all right over there?
I'm doing good, Mike.
All right, just checking on you. How's the phone?
I was looking down at my, it's going to be hard to believe, but I was looking down at my phone for a second.
Oh, no, I didn't know what you were doing over there. Yeah. I thought you were distracted.
I was looking for the rock I never dropped on the floor. Yeah. Mike.
So me and Scott started talking and, catching up and I seen him at the Golden Gloves in Lowell. His kid's doing a little fighting out of Capiello's gym. And I went down to Bridgewater to a
Bridgewater,
show?
Yeah.
And he wasn't there. And then we caught up in the Golden Gloves, but we really didn't, you know, have a lot of time to talk, but we've been catching up a little bit. And, you know, I'll let you tell a little bit about yourself and how you met me and how your work is and how that came about. How did you find me?
Mike, thank you for inviting me down here. Johnny Bart, thank you very much.
My God.
Appreciate it. So I was scrolling through social media like we all do, right? Can you go look at your phone? I'm constantly just scrolling. And a lot of it, I think, is just to keep your mind occupied. You know, I'm a fucking scabber. Anyways, I come across Ian Bick's podcast. And, you know, the guy's talking about, you know, Plymouth and cock-a-bomb and the cops and, you know, management loaf and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I know this story. I'm like, I was there. I told that story before. You know what I mean? I messaged you and yeah. I don't think because I wasn't following you or something, it wasn't going through, or maybe your account was shadow banned at the time. But anyways, Mikey Palm messaged you.
No, if you don't follow Mike, if he's following you and you don't follow him, he'll just
Yeah, no, but even then, even if someone follows me,
your whole existence.
And I don't follow them back. I don't get a lot of messages. They go in a hidden account.
Anyways, I go in the shop the next day, and I'm talking to the guys, and you know, I'm like, hey, you guys follow this guy, Bean Shooter? That guy, he's fucking great, fucking hilarious, blah blah blah. And I'm like, I think I know this dude. So yeah.
Sounds like you got a real shop crew. Number one.
Oh, yeah.
That's
oh,
the yeah. first thing.
They're all those... fucking scrolling too.
Yeah. We're all stuck.
As long as it ain't on the clock. And it lies on the clock.
Yeah. So anyways, we started talking back and forth and you asked me to come on. And again, I was thinking, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, just fucking jailhouse ragtime. And I thought maybe it might be a little, an opportunity to share a little hope. You know?
Yeah.
From where I come from, you know, I grew up in Brockton. Father committed suicide when I was 11, you know.
Yeah.
My mother was an alcoholic and a drug addict. There was no stability. There was no family, nothing. You know, we stood in the government cheese lines and fucking, you know, that was life. That was growing up. And, you know, bouncing out of Plymouth. Lived that life, man.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the way, I had a kid.
I thought you were going to say, and you met me and everything changed.
Right. The fucking
life became amazing.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the way, God.
Anyways, life happens. I mean, there's a whole, you know, it depends how long you want to stay here tonight. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'll give you a quick little version of it, you know. Whatever, in and out of the House of Correction, blah, blah, blah. And in 2005, man, I just had enough, you know.
So let me cut you off for a second.
Go back.
So back then when I'm bouncing out of places too, I met Scott in the hole. I met you.
We were in the hole, dude. Of course.
All right. You know, I forget a lot of stuff and I didn't know if I was with you twice somewhere. Or I saw you somewhere else in the streets. I remember something, you know.
So we were in there. What year were you in? What year were you in Plymouth? 97?
Yeah, beginning of 97. So Johnny was there also.
I was in Plymouth in 96.
98.
97. No, you're right. 97. Because 96.
Was it 98? It was 98. Because I was in Plymouth from 95.
I'd bet 97. But
So 95, I go to Plymouth, right?
Yeah.
And actually, back it up. I get a heinous, I get an attempted murder, kidnapping, armed robbery. We kicked the door in the Dominicans, tied them up, took their stuff, and they called the police. You know what I mean? So I get a nasty charge. I'm in Bridgewater, the old SECC, the addiction center.
Yep.
It's the Wild West, you know. I'm sick as a dog. I'm a kid. You're not allowed to smoke when you're wearing pajamas. So I'm running around smoking cigarettes. I'm not fully detoxed yet, right? Blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I get a falling out with the cop. I end up in the hole over in SECC. And I says, enough's enough. And I hang myself.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, so the God cut me down and
really?
Yeah. And
interesting.
What happens? Like you see that a lot with someone's father kills himself, and it runs in the family.
They put you in the fucking paper Johnny, right? Put you on fucking Q5 watch, stick you in asshole status and ship me back to the House of Correction and then ship me over to the bug house.
Let me ask you a question. Let me stop you real quick.
Yeah.
Now, you say you have a message of hope, right? We love that here when people come from the bottom and work all the way up and have a message of hope. What were you experiencing when you thought it was a good idea to end your life?
So I was thinking I had a kidnapping, an armed robbery, an attempted murder. So I was looking at some time on that. And now this cop. So anyways, the cop shakes me down. He's looking for tobacco, fucking strips me naked, kicks me in the balls, right? So and he grabs me by. So he's like, get dressed, you piece of shit, blah, 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 whatever, whatever. And he grabs me by the arm and he's escorting me down the hall. And I'm like, this motherfucker. I fucking jammed him into the door jam and he went to come down. I spun out from around him, dropped him. Anyways, now they gave me a dirty one. Now they're charging me with assault and battery on a corrections officer. Now I'm looking at on and afters and I'm like, I just don't want to do this no more. I was just done.
How old were you?
22, 23. I was a kid, you know. But again, my first incarceration, I was 14 in, you know, in DYS, in the Brockton DYS.
The old Brockton Y?
Yeah, we stayed in and out of there for, you know, for my whole childhood, right up until I was, you know, old enough to go
to say the Brockton Y, the only place. The food was cold and the milk was warm.
The green hot dogs.
The food would sit there so long. Disgusting. By the time you went downstairs to eat it, the milk was warm and the food was cold.
Imagine that was a restaurant too. You could go in off the street and eat that food.
Well, why wouldn't you? Why? It would seem like a no-brainer.
So they shipped me over to the Bug House. So I get to the Bug House and I got three childhood friends that we grew up in the same neighborhood doing time over there. They're buffing the floors. They're cadre workers.
They're
getting paid. They're hiding out over there is what they're doing. You know what I mean? They're doing the laundry. They're buffing the floors. And you could smoke. We're walking through the yard eating ice cream. Like in the Bug House, you know? So they ship me back to Plymouth. I do some superficial cut-ups so I could go back over there. I tell my guy, hold my stuff. I'll be back in a week. You know what I mean? So I do that trip a couple times, and they're like, what do you want? So originally when I took the two-year sentence, it was supposed to be out of Bristol County, and I was supposed to go to St. Mary's. You know, the fucking the drug program over there. It's almost like a minimum.
Right.
And I had it all worked out, and the judge went with it, and then I ended up over in Plymouth, and I wasn't too happy about it. But anyways.
Modified or something?
I was sentenced out of Plymouth, and it was a Bristol County program. But anyways, by the third time going back and forth to the Bug House, the UTM came, and he said, what are you doing? What do you want? I said, I shipped me down to Bristol County where I was supposed to go. So I ended up going down to Bristol County. I stayed down there till April of 97, because I got out a week before the Easter riots. And so I was on, I'm out for a little while. I just did a deuce down in Bristol County. I met a lot of Rhode Island guys. I met a lot of Fall River guys. Now I'm running back and forth to Rhode Island. I'm getting bricks of dope. We're shooting a lot of fucking dope. I end up having a couple seizures. I end up in New England Medical Center. They tell me the blood vessels in my head are wrapped around each other and resting on my brain. They got to do brain surgery. Jesus Christ. I says, I'm not fucking, when are we
good
doing
thing,
that?
Hey, good thing you're in Boston.
Hey, listen, I'm strung out.
That's where you want to be.
You know what I mean?
Like
I'm strung out. And I'm like, when are you doing that? They're like, oh, we got to next week. I says, all right, I'll be back. So they give me all kinds of Klonopin, Xanax, whatever, sent me out the door. And I ended up going back, having the surgery. But so I ended up picking up a couple more cases, obviously, because that's when I ended up back over in Plymouth. And that's when I must have seen you. So it must have been the end of 97, beginning of 98.
All right. Yeah. Well, you seem to know the times. I'm not going
to. Well, that's why. No, I was trying to piece it together. Was it before I did all that nonsense or after? But the reason I think we got to talking was because I did a few months up in the Lowell House back in 91. I was about 18.
All right.
Yeah, 18, 19.
Lowell's a nice place.
Anyways, yeah.
How long were you in the hole with me? A couple months? Was it a while?
Must have been, yeah.
I was down there a while.
Must have been. Yeah, I don't do well in population.
They weren't big fans of mine. Well. Yeah.
I did in the end. The last couple, I was tired, man. It was, you know. You kind of get older, you know what I mean? I went May 18, 2005 was the day I got arrested, man. And you know, you hear it a lot. You know, I wasn't arrested. I was rescued. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And going in was the same. The cops were the same. The cons were the same bullshit fucking apple and bologna sandwich. It was all the same. I just wasn't cool with it no more. I was like, this is fucking.
It wasn't a badge of honor anymore, right?
Dude, no, I'd wasted a lot of years trying to build a fucking reputation.
Right.
It was nothing, dude.
You proved it to everybody but yourself.
Right. So I was just done. I said, well, I'll give it a shot. So I've been in and out of the program for, you know.
Yes, sure.
For like fucking forever. And I said, I'll give it a shot. I'll give it an honest shot. Because I could never say that I actually gave it an honest shot. You know what I mean? I would always, we could always do good for a little while. Get off this quote. There you go.
Yeah.
Could always do good for a little while.
No, it's crazy, right? You talked about you wanted to commit suicide.
Yeah.
And then
I almost did it.
How did you feel when they told you you had something wrong with your brain?
Did you feel like, man, because, like, you know, it's like in one breath they'll say, yeah, I'm kill myself, so, make it easy. And they say you're sick and you're like, I can't die. You know what I mean?
So I was,
you caught up,
I was so fucking just lost.
Yeah.
That, you know, and I went to a spiritual retreat up in Keene, New Hampshire with my brother one year. And see, I get emotional. I told you that. I'll take on the move team, but you start talking about sensitive shit, I'll start crying. But and I was journaling a lot back then, and it was when I first got clean. And I wrote down, I've been waiting my whole life to die that I never learned to live.
Yeah.
No, that makes
sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I got to take a second because I get choked up. And it was the truth, because my father had died. All my friends were dying. You know what I mean? And it's like, why even bother if I'm just going to die anyways? So it was the fast track. It was the fast track to go to where we were going to go anyways, you know? And I never put any effort into living. I learned how to lie, cheat, steal, con, manipulate, hustle, fucking. That's you know, I was born into active addiction. You know what I mean? That's how we live.
So I remember... you know, obviously the hole in Plymouth was a whole journey.
Yeah.
That place was a tough assignment when I was there, and that whole management loaf. Did you ever eat that stuff?
A couple times.
Yeah. That was,
it was fucking bad hit, dude.
It was unbelievable. Justin, you ever have management loaf?
I don't think so.
Disciplinary loaf?
No.
You know.
You don't want to. It was
the big beans, I think, that did it for me.
They'd slide one under your door at like 5 a.m, then another one at like 3 p.m, and that was all you got.
It'd break.
That was all you got.
Was I in there? Was the big muscle kid in there? He was like, Lieutenant Sprague, I'm just a shell of a man.
I don't know.
It was like 240.
But this Lieutenant Sprague, they break you right down.
I forget.
They break you right down.
Yeah.
But this Lieutenant Sprague was like a former Marine.
I know who he is.
Really?
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, Sprague. Sprague's Yetman, fucking all them scumbags.
Duggan. Yeah.
Mason.
ADS Duggan. I don't know these
ones. ADS Duggan, absolutely. Listen, I'll show you paperwork. I filed a suit on the whole place.
How
about
do you still
it?
Have this stuff?
But, listen, because I got every single fucking piece of paper I've ever had from Jim.
ADS Duggan. At the end, finally.
Assistant Deputy Superintendent.
That's what it was.
ADS.
So I'm ripping out and going through everything, doing everything. And, you know, we're butting heads and they're sending move teams on and the whole nine. And then finally they called me out of my cell and they called me in the office. It was Yetman and Duggan. And they had like a, you know, like a 50 sack of canteen. And a Walkman radio. Because I've been in the hole. They say, hey, you're going back, you know, wherever Walpole, Old Colony, wherever, right?
Just chill.
When the bus comes, right? It comes. But in the meantime, it was like they extended the olive branch. And like he was on the street, I was tired, John.
Yeah, I know.
Did they know I was very close.
Because listen, that was the only place.
Out of the cell.
That was the only place. And I'm sure you're going to say, yeah. Because that was the only place I was ever at where they had a wait and action status, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then they had the disciplinary, but usually it's the same thing, right? Disciplinary over there, they had a Bible. That was it. The runner, like the kid, was the kid Felix. That's why he was a big
Captain Cardinal. Captain Richard.
Yeah, Cardinal. Yeah. Captain Cardinal. He was the one that did the disciplinary reports.
He's a redhead.
He's the one that had the hearings. He was the hearing officer.
Yeah. I did 67 days in isolation. Like you said,
that's crazy.
Just a fucking Bible. 67 days, and they released me to the streets.
Whoa.
They released me to the street. I was like shell shocked.
Yep,
you know?
As I was.
Yeah.
And I got back at the general population.
I was in the hole there for 5 months, so they sent me the whole colony.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, we spent a lot of time down there.
Because,
you know, it's a fucking, you get out of line just a little bit, and they fucking plug you, dude.
Yeah. Plymouth was wild. And I came from Wyatt Detention Facility, which was a private place where you could basically, you did what, I mean, listen, we started a group demonstration there. We flooded the whole unit. There were so many people, and they only had 8 cells in the hole, that all of us got a sanction.
Yeah. Didn't even
verbal warning.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the sanction. Yeah. Don't do that again.
Wow.
When I went to Plymouth, boy, they were serious though.
So down in Plymouth with him, you know, and going through all that, and years later, you know, when you're out on your hour rec, you know, I'm probably at his door all the time talking, and he's at mine, and you know, that's why I remembered him right away. I remember, you know, remembered personal stuff about him.
Right.
So years later, I'm out running around, and I'm in detox, and I go to a holding. I didn't last long. I was there like a week.
Weymouth, right?
Yeah, Weymouth.
Yeah.
I went through a holding in Weymouth. Spectrum, I think it was.
Sure. Yeah.
So I remember it was a Patriots playoff game, and I think it might have been when what was Brady hurt or something? Cassell? Was it Cassell? Why was Brady out?
When they missed the playoffs that year.
Yeah. I remember when he tore his ACL. I was in Tewksbury Detox. against the Chiefs, I think.
When Wiggins was talking about that Super Bowl, I was in Plymouth.
Yeah. So, well, whatever it was, I think it was a playoff game against Miami. I think it was Cassell or somebody. For some reason, I'm thinking Brady was in it. And they're like, you know, we got a commitment coming up. And when you're in detox, like an outside commitment comes up, you got to go to this meeting, Justin. And like everybody wants to watch the Patriots game, you know? So we all go down to the, you know, the chow hall or whatever, the kitchen, and we're sitting there, and this kid comes in, you know, and I'm like, wait a minute, I know this fucking kid, you know what I mean? So he gets up, there's a TV, just turns the game on and just sits there and doesn't say a word. So I was like, that's my guy.
That's my guy.
He understands right now, you know, and in your own way, you spread a little message all right there. You might have said a couple words. You started, you know, electrical business, and your brother got you going on that.
Sure. But,
and that was the last time I saw you. You know, I saw you in jail, and then I saw you there, and that was it until you messaged me on Instagram.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because again, like you said, you know, obviously we fucking did a lot of talking, and I've met a lot of people over the years, man, and like, you know, I can't remember fucking.
You think he's unforgettable?
I have a hard time. Yeah,
unforgettable.
They wrote that song about you too, Mike. Yeah. It's amazing. Two songs in one day.
Well, I would rush, working man.
So, long story short, I get clean, man. You know what I mean? I give the program of Narcotics Anonymous 100%, and I don't look back. You know what I mean? I got involved with H&I. I was, you know
what that is, Johnny?
Hospitals and institutions.
Yeah.
And we bring commitments into facilities, right. You know. And again, I'm not representing any program today. I haven't been to any programs in quite some time. If we have time at the end, I'll get into that. But anyways, we brought commitments into Walpole, Norfolk.
It's awesome.
Bridgewater, fucking OCCC. You know, after about 5 or 8 years, I was able to walk back into Plymouth. And again, you know, I was able to walk back into a place where I spent so much time and where I felt so hopeless.
Right. I mean, you went from in one breath, you were trying to commit suicide.
You know,
now you're in there, you know, where
sharing a little bit of hope. So,
and having a lot of hope yourself. I'm saying you got a lot of life to live.
So I'm an electrician. The reason I'm an electrician is because my brother went to trade school, learned to trade, and, you know, he would drag me along to fucking work for the day for a pack of cigarettes and a fucking sub. You know what I mean? And you learn to trade along the way.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for it. When I got out, I, you know, went to work in the trade. I started going to school for my license. So there's this little box on the fucking application that says, have you ever been convicted of a felony?
Right.
And you got to check it because they make you sign a Corey check anyway. Lying. So, yes, I've been convicted of a felony, a couple of them. And so, okay, so now we got to go to the Board of Electrical Examiners in the city of Boston, right? And I'm thinking, you know, I'm talking to my brother. I'm nervous. He's probably like, he says, yeah, it's probably just a couple guys. We'll go in. We'll tell them, you know, whatever. I get letters from my fucking, from the vendors. And I got the counselor from the halfway house, Stepping Stone down Fall River. He's going to come with me, you know. And this is like 2 years later. I'd already been out of the halfway house. And so we get there. And it's a big deal. It's the Board of Electrical Examiners. There's 50 fucking people there. There's lawyers, paralegals, and you know what I mean? And it's an ordeal. So they ask if you want a closed session, open session. We said closed session. Anyway, so I sit down and I sit there and they start reading my record. Now, I got a 9-page record. I got 63 arraignments. It's heinous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they start going down it and I'm sinking in my chair. I'm like, fuck me, right? Yeah. Fuck. So, you know. The people taking their glasses, throwing them on the table. They're disgusted. They're fucking, look at this fucking guy, right? So anyways, they go through the whole thing and the guy looks at me and goes, is all that true? I said, yeah, unfortunately it is. He's like, well, what are you going to say about it? I said, well, unfortunately, you know, that's how I grew up. That's how I was taught to live. You know what I mean? And yeah, that's it. You know, and I gave him a little quick little background of where I came from, and I gave him a quick little, you know, background of the things that I'd just done, the program that I completed. Right now, I had some letters. I had the gentleman from the halfway house stood up and said some things on my behalf. My brother was there. And at the end of it, the guy said, that's probably the worst record we've heard in this room, but it's also the greatest success story. And they gave me the go-ahead to sit for my license. They gave me a 3-year conditional. If I got arrested anytime within the 3 years, they would take my license, and I would have to go back in front of them, and you know, for anything.
Makes sense.
You know, and that was about 15 years ago. Yeah, yeah. Because I just seen. So, you know, I start. This is 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. Again, I don't know how fucking long we want to be here for, but, you know, my daughter's mother passed away in 08, and I found myself a single parent of 2 kids.
Really?
Yep. My stepson, Joshua, who he's 32 now, his father's in the max doing life. He got a murder case out of Brockton. Damn. And his mother passed away, my daughter's mother. So
how did he turn out? He's doing good though?
Joshua? Yeah. Nah, Joshua's fucked up right now. I don't mind saying it. I hope he fucking hears it, honestly. He's finding his way in life, you know. I gave him a lot of opportunities. I gave him a lot of shots. I gave him a lot of chances that, you know, not too many people get.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely you didn't get when you were a kid.
No. No. So Joshua's going to find his way, and it is what it is.
My Aunt Franny would always say, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, he's, you know.
One way or another, you'll figure it out.
At 32, you know? You're a man. Nobody's coming to save you, man.
Yeah.
Nobody's coming to save you. You got to pull your fucking pants up and fucking take care of business.
Yeah.
It is what it is, you know. In your 20s, you know, yeah, we're still trying to figure shit out. But, you know, anything over 30, dude, you're a fucking grown man, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I love him to death, and I wish nothing but the best for him. But what the fuck are you going to do? But, anyways, I found myself a single parent, two kids, and
what'd you say? 2 daughters?
No, I had a daughter and my stepson there.
Yeah, but and now you have biological children. You have one.
Now I have 3.
Yeah, now you have 3. Wow,
3 biological, and a grandson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Showing your age, stud.
I'm gonna be 52 next week.
Okay.
Yeah, I am. I'm grateful to be 52 now. You know what I mean? I really am.
I tell you, I bitch about it. You know, I'm 55. I'm going to be 56 this year, and I can't believe it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like fucking almost like bummed out. And when my birthday come around, and my close friend, John Sullivan, who lost his brother, Paul, who was just, you know, it's always the good ones. Not always, but you know what I mean? Like you know, his brother got cancer later in life and in the late 30s, and, you know, and he died. And he said to me one day, he goes, I never want to hear you complaining about another birthday.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow.
There's a lot of people that aren't having them.
And
I saw
a kid tonight. I know John LaDuke, who was unbelievable salesman. He was just, I mean, unbelievable. Just crushing life. Never did drugs, nothing. Had a crippling, debilitating stroke, you know, like 5 years ago. And I saw him tonight. He's got the best attitude. And his saying is, you never know.
You don't?
I go, I might have to incorporate that in my new thing.
Yeah, like, you really don't.
He's like, you never know, right? So I left the restaurant. I left my keys on the table in the restaurant. Every Thursday night, he goes down there on Tuesday night and plays cards. And I walk back in. I says, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to stop my truck without my keys. And he looked at me and said, you never know. So he's got a great attitude, but
perspective, right?
Yeah, perspective. He's got the best attitude, you know. And,
but imagine after you just said that, though, Mike. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just think like, because we all. I mean, I know like the aging process. Guys like us, you know. I mean, everybody. You know, a zillion people have went through it, right? But it's not fun, right? You get wiser between the ears, but your face gets wrinkly. You know, I mean, you want to do what you did when you were a kid, and you really can't. Like, but that's good perspective. I appreciate that because sometimes I get to myself saying the same exact thing, you know, and I'm like. Like, you take a step back here. Hold on.
Yeah.
Be grateful. Some people, you know, then we hear all these horror stories about this one's sick, that one. Like, just yeah, every day you have to wring the happiness out of every day, bro.
Because you and your wife had cancer and so many things.
I met a woman in 2009. We got together and you know, we had a son, and then we had another son. We got married, and I started a business. And in the meantime, she developed thyroid cancer. So we went through that. She got her thyroid removed. At that time, we chose. So again, you know, giving my past and all that, you always get a little bit of depression, anxiety, a little fucked up, right? I'm a little fucked up. We're all a little fucked up, right? So instead of taking benzos or any type of antidepressant or any type of fucking man-made fucking Western medications that are going to have me walking around fucking drooling, babbling, we chose cannabis, me and my wife. Mm-hmm. So with that, kind of alienated us from the program. You know, and I don't blame them. I mean, I lived that, you know, I celebrated, I think the last cake I got was 12 years of complete abstinence and 100% committed. You know what I mean? And, and it was a decision. It was a mutual decision. Hers for her, cause she didn't want to take painkillers and stuff like that for her cancer.
Right.
And mine, because I didn't want to take, you know, psychotic medication because I'm a little down. Right, you know what I mean? But we said if it affected our lives or if it, you know, if our lives changed any bit because of it, then we would, you know, address it, obviously, you know what I mean? And we don't look at it as like active addiction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course I'm an addict. I take everything to the extreme. So I grow my own now. I make my own edibles and it's all natural and it's all organic, you know, nutrients and all stuff like that. You know what I mean? And so it's very pure and yeah, we're just, you know,
interesting.
So, a couple of years back, she gets another cancer diagnosis in her kidney. And it's right by the urinal duct, and they're afraid that, you know, it's going to spread through her whole body. So they got to take the whole kidney. So we go through that whole thing again. And like you said, man, every day is a blessing. You know what I mean? And live life to the fullest. I started a business some years back, 2010. So it's been about 15 years now.
It does.
And it's like everything else, man. Life is a roller coaster. We've had some really big ups and we've had some downs, man. And you know, we've just held on the whole way through and we've taken a lot of vacations. Scroll through my Facebook pictures, man. You'll see, dude. Yeah. I've lived a really nice fucking life, dude. I've built a beautiful home for us down in Plymouth. You know, we put a nice pool in the backyard. We had beautiful summers out there. Beautiful, you know,
check that place out. I've only been there once, but I didn't get out much.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Down in Plymouth. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I'm right down the street from, you know.
I remember being cuffed and shackled in the state. Yeah, they're taking me there. What's that? It was like a lake and it was cranberry bogs.
Bogs.
I was like, wow.
I guess the message is hope and the promise is freedom, man, that. You know, no matter how low you are.
Yeah, that's a good one. He's got some good ones.
No matter how low you are, you know, it's fucking like that movie Blow, man. He said, sometimes you're flush and sometimes you bust. And when you're up, it doesn't seem like it's good. And when you're down, it never feels like it's going to be up again. But life goes on, man. Yeah. And you just enjoy the fucking ride because it's going to be over someday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And some days are easier than others.
The message is hope and the promise is freedom.
That's it. You never have to use
it
again.
I'm never going
to
forget it.
Really? Right? Yeah, I'll forget it. He called me.
He's like, hey, I'm down by you. I'm going to this commitment. I told him, message is hope and the promise is freedom from active addiction. You never have to use again, man.
I think
that's the fucking truth.
I think I dropped that gem in the meeting.
So, you know what? I want to ask, Mike, I want to ask you something. So, what do you think about, you know, the use of some drugs, you know, when, you know, when recovery is a complete abstinence. For us it is, right?
Yeah.
For you and I, it's complete abstinence.
Yeah.
We don't do no drugs. We've been hanging out together for quite a while now. And we're around people that drink and whatever, do what they do. So, but what is your opinion of that? Because I'm going to tell you my opinion.
Okay. Well, I have some controversial takes on some of this stuff. You know, I've said it before, where, and then people like come at me really hard, and maybe maybe it's because I don't really understand what a disease is. But when I hear a disease, I think of somebody who has HIV or cancer, and I say, these people would love to have my disease of shooting dope, right? Like, I'm like, you know, I mean, yeah, when you're caught up with a habit, you can't just stop. Like, it's very, very, addiction is a powerful, powerful thing. Is it a disease? I don't know. I think that the, you know, getting back to your question, the whole landscape has changed. Yes. I don't break balls with people in my sober houses for smoking weed. If they drink, I'll bounce them out because I think booze is bad.
Yes.
It'll lead to other things.
Of course.
I don't look at marijuana like really. Like I'd like to do it. But my whole thing is, I've been clean and abstinent so long. Why do it? Why break something that ain't fixed? Like, if I do, I think if I smoked marijuana or did an edible, do I think I'm going to go and shoot dope and do? No, I don't. I don't think. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I, you know, maybe you would. Maybe it would fuck me up mentally.
I think if you do, you wanted to shoot dope anyways.
Yeah.
I don't think the marijuana had anything to fucking do with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But booze, I get drunk and I don't want to be fucked.
Well,
that's
you
different.
Make bad decisions.
Yeah, you make bad decisions on the booze.
Marijuana. I've seen booze ruin families, destroy lives. It's fucking the worst thing ever. Yeah.
So that's, and I appreciate that. No, because no, that's good. I'm saying.
And
so,
one more thing, psilocybin also.
But at this point, I don't think
I don't categorize it as a drug.
Okay.
You know,
no, we know your position. I was interested in his. Yeah, yeah. But I'm going to tell you mine.
I'm more like, I would rather. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. So I'm saying we heard you over here, Mike. So now I just took this course to become a recovery coach. I'm a recovery coach now.
Sure.
So I think. What I've learned was there's many ways that you can be sober, right? Especially with the maintenance drugs, because I'm like, well, maintenance drugs, they're still, you know, still doing methadone. You're still doing, but a guy can hold a job. A guy can be a productive member of society. Yeah. So it's a different way to view things. But, you know, what the way that I see it for myself is that, you know, I don't necessarily, I'm not going to use drugs for me. It's abstinence, because you know what? I know one way I can fuck my life up.
Sure.
That's to get high, do a drug, drink. And like Mike was saying, I've never seen nobody's life change from smoking a joint, but I've seen a lot of people's life change from taking a drink.
Right. Yeah.
So I was just curious about, you know, for me, I'm an abstinence guy.
If I know there's a million ways to do it now. If you asked me 10 years ago, because it's been about 8 years now that I've been using the cannabis, I'd have been on the same page with you 100%. Absolutely. And that's why I don't go to meetings. And I suffer because of that.
Why don't you?
Well, I suffer because of that, because
you miss it. I don't have a circle.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have work acquaintances but I don't have any solid because I'm not using, so I don't have active friends. And I'm not in recovery, so I don't have recovery friends. Yeah. So like where, you know what I mean? It's a weird place to be at. But I also know that it brings me relief. You know what I mean? And again, it's been about 8 years. My life hasn't changed.
No. Yeah.
I've lived.
How does it work for the pain when she started taking it? Does it work?
Yeah.
Because my friend Michael Mora, who was a heavyweight champion, world heavyweight champion, Michael Mora, he never took pain meds either. And he had all kinds of surgeries on his knees. But he went so hard. He loves it. He's eating edibles. Fucking stoned. But he always did that. And I remember seeing a thing on Bob Lobel. Remember Bob Lobel?
Yeah, sure.
He was like crippled with, you know, whatever he had.
ALS, probably.
ALS, something. And he was a big proponent of the, you know, the.
Yeah.
The,
and like you said, so I have a friend who's a psychedelic clinician. I'm not even sure how you say it. So, and they're out in Arizona. And there's a lot of research being done as far as like microdosing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not taking as much to like trip out and like we did when we were teenagers. Like I'm not a teenager anymore.
Right.
And I understand addiction. And again, I dedicated my life to it for over 12 years. I mean,
some would say a professional.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But to go a little deeper, like I was looking into that Ibogaine down in Mexico, and that's a whole, I mean, if you go down a rabbit hole with the Ibogaine, and It's a place where you go and they monitor you and like you really go on a trip and like go back to. But also with the Ibogaine, they've also said that within like hours, you're not physically addicted to heroin anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Did you hear?
Sure. I know some people have experienced it and say that they don't take no more, you know, those drugs you were talking about?
Yeah.
Like the drugs that you were talking about, like Prozac and stuff like that, antidepressants. Right. They don't take them no more either.
Right.
So I know a couple people.
So I reached out to my buddy.
Yeah.
I reached out to my buddy in Arizona. His
I'd like to just go on a trip.
His wife's a clinician there. And well, again,
no, seriously.
Right. So yeah. So
I love that. I love tripping, you know.
Ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Ayahuasca. Yeah. So like those are like the Indian fucking spiritual fucking, there's a fucking that plant there and like, you know, they do the sweat box, the
TPO,
you fucking. And then you confess to the guy everything you ever did.
And then he touches you
fucking. That's a little risky.
That's a slippery slope.
Why are you touching me there? But no,
hey, guess what? You're never gonna crave heroin again. Maybe you got a warrant for your arrest.
Listen, but hear me out. And maybe that's later in life. Maybe that's when we're a little older and you know, maybe you just want to get to.
We're old enough.
No, but you know what I mean.
Like, we're old.
But we're not kids anymore. We're like, you know what I mean, like. Listen, I don't know about you, but I am not going to fuck my life up today.
I'm not. Well, I'm trying.
Like shooting heroin does not sound great.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, smoke crack just sounds terrible.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, yeah. I don't know.
You thinking about doing it?
The ayahuasca.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go out to Arizona.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's a wild ride.
I also have a friend who is big into the mushrooms and, you know, grows them himself.
If I ever do anything again, it'll be psilocybin. Mushrooms. I want to eat one of those chocolate bars so bad.
So then I was talking with him and again, he, the purest form, like really has it dialed in. Yeah. And like really has a hobby. It's like a passion and it's the cleanest you'll ever see, like spore. Like, so you take the spore from here and put it there.
Still taste gross though?
No, they don't taste like anything really. Cardboard. I'm not there yet. I'm not, you know what I mean?
I can still taste it. I haven't eaten mushroom caps.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, when you're in the throes of addiction shooting dope, you're really not worried about doing mushrooms. You know what I mean?
I talked to him and I says, I said, you know, because he started talking to me. So he messaged me and he said, hey, I see, you know, you're, because I knew him from recovery, you know, years ago. And he says, hey, I see, you know, you post some stuff about cannabis. You know, did you introduce cannabis into your life? You know, something like that. And, and I'm like, yeah, actually I did, blah, blah, blah. And, you know.
Well, have you got a hard time from
No. Ran it down. He goes, oh, that, yeah. So I've introduced mushrooms into my life. And I'm like, oh, cool, blah, blah, blah. So we went back and forth a little bit. So I'm like, yeah, you know, like microdose. And he goes, no, I macrodose. I'm like, hey, so
he, take goes, a lot,
he walks through the desert. So I'm like, oh, so
that's
like,
my kind of guy.
I'm like, you fucking,
I'm a big,
I want those chocolate bars.
I have a big macrodose of myself. I said, ironically enough.
I says, so like you
hey, go Mike, balls and I don't think they want us to come and do that commitment anymore.
I do miss it. I do miss commitments. I miss sharing a message of hope. I miss.
But I think you have a message of hope. You just shared one.
I do. But again, and that's why I was honored to be able to come in here and shoot the shit with you guys. And you know.
But it's about unorthodoxy too. I'm saying. So me and Mike, you know, talk a lot about a lot of different things that like some people find controversial. But that's the thing about me is I always want to be genuine. I got this far from being genuine.
Sure.
I don't want to profess to be anything that I'm not because it's going to appease other people.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think that's important too.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been very transparent about everything. You know, when we were talking about when he asked me, you know, he goes, I should have you come up on the podcast unless, you know, because of your business. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I've been transparent about everything my whole life.
Yeah, like, I respect that.
People ask me, well, why don't you get your record sealed? Because again, in May, it'll be 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't touched heroin, cocaine, nothing other than cannabis for 20 fucking years.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to be said about that.
Yeah.
You know what absolutely. I mean? And I don't even know what the fuck I'm saying.
I think of drugs if it makes your life unmanageable, right? Because, I mean, when you were doing drugs, Mike, your life was unmanageable. Oh, no?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I'm different. They told me.
But you know how they lie.
I mean,
Mike.
Everybody shoots into that jungle because they're
everybody
other
hangs out of McCullers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody hangs out of McCullers and goes to a shelter.
I've been known.
What was the shelter?
Yeah, shelter right across from my college.
Yeah, what was the shelter called, though?
Shelter. The Middlesex shelter. Right, yeah, across from McCullers. McCullers is long gone. I tell a story about McCullers. There was like four or five brothers. One of them ended up being a CEO in Billerica, Chucky McCullough. And I thought I saw him a couple of weeks ago in Isle Dive. I wasn't sure if it was him, but when we were little kids, I climbed up on the roof and there was a big American flag. And me and this other kid, Johnny Sheehan, he's dead now, God rest his soul. We stole the American flag. So we find out the owner, Charlie McCullough, who everyone loved. It was like his father was like, you know, storm the beaches of Normandy or something. It's like a Marine and the flag was on his casket, you know? So they're flying around the neighborhood down there fucking questioning. You know, people gave us right up until fucking like 12 years old, 13. Yeah. We went down there with it like, here you go, sir. Sorry about that.
Misunderstand.
Whenever I think of McCullers, I think of that story. But yeah, like I said, the guys in my sober house, I don't break balls over weed. And some people, like you said, you know, having an addictive personality, though, some people, like, you know, I had one kid who was spending $300 a week on fucking dabs and he's late on his rent. So
there's,
you got that too.
Right. You're absolutely right. And I think it's an individual. It's an individual thing. You know, this is just me. This is my story. This isn't everybody's story. You know what I mean? It's what's worked for me, you know? And yes, I see it. I see him with I can't fuck with it. They got a fucking blowtorch and a fucking glass pipe and I can't do all that. Yeah. You know what I mean? No. I mean, I'll eat a brownie, you know, fucking, and feel a little okay. Feel a little, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not fucking.
And I think it starts really with the one phrase that when you come into AA, it says on the back of the one day chip, it's to thine own self be true, right?
I'm saying,
I think that's a great guiding principle for anything in life.
And that's what I said to him. I mean, if you're going to go shoot dope, it's because you're going to shoot dope. It's not because you smoked a little fucking pot.
I liked it.
Right. It's not because of nothing else.
If pot's going to go make you shoot dope, I think you were looking to shoot dope in the first place. Yeah,
so I have a really, really good friend of mine who was there for me through everything, through getting high, recovery. He was about 30 years clean. And, you know, I'm not going to say his name or anything
like
that. I hate
to hear his story.
But he fucking, dude, he fucking died in a fucking hotel, fucking overdosed. And I honestly believe it's because he never got out of the front row. Like, I get it. Meetings are important. You know, recovery is important. But at some point, man, you know, if your whole fucking life is centered around newcomers and helping people and fucking, you haven't got out of, in 30 fucking years, you haven't got out of that front row. You haven't done anything fucking different. You're still hanging out playing fucking spades with the newcomers. Like,
different perspective.
It's like, you know, like you're shooting dope is always going to be just around the corner if you never get away from that corner. You know what I mean? And that's, again,
interesting perspective.
Again, yeah, just my
30 years clean.
30.
So my thing is, right?
30, dude.
Abstinence.
You never count me out.
Yes.
I know. Abstinence. I got 12. But
abstinence.
My thing is now, it's even worse because I've been on the sidelines for 12 years and I like, you know, dope. But now it's not. You know, it's not dope.
No,
so
it's not dope anymore.
It's such a roll of the dice. Right. If I do ever decide to go,
it's not.
You know,
I'm gonna be in Colombia.
I'm just gonna walk right in the ER. Yeah,
you're better off in Colombia.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. I just think for myself, like, I just know where I am today and where I've been.
Yeah.
And I just emotionally, I would feel so defeated. Like, I've never felt defeated about anything. Like, you know what I'm saying? I've always looked at it, you know, me and a bear are fighting over there and just don't help me, help the bear. You know what I'm saying? But I would feel so defeated. And I think all the wind would be out of my sails. I just know that, like, every day I just tell myself that if I want to fuck my life up, go do something to do with drugs or alcohol.
I'll tell you this, like, there's a saying, you know, like, the fun's gone once you've been clean.
So like
you said, once you do it, like, I'm in the hotel, boom, I do it, or I, whatever. You know, you look in the mirror right away. Like, your mind starts going, oh, man. I fucked up, or everyone's going to know. Like,
not,
you know,
even when
you're younger, you're just getting high, you know, you're enjoying it.
But
there comes a point where it's like, you know, you're not really.
I agree.
Right away, you're going to be like, oh, man.
I can't believe I did this. I think my life is over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think at this point, I just don't see it like this. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I'm so removed from it.
I had a kid in my back seat blasting off. I was driving him to detox. Yeah. I didn't even care. I stopped at CVS and got him work. So I didn't even care. And I'm like, I'm turning around looking at him, right? And I'm just like, there is nothing that I'm seeing that's like, oh, man.
No. Well, I wish I could. Yeah, I know.
It was the exact opposite. Like, oh, you shouldn't be around there. You shouldn't see that. I'm like, listen, let me tell you. It was good for me.
Dude, I changed my diet. I just lost 30 pounds. I'm fucking, I want to feel good. I want to feel better.
I just put on about 30.
I know, Mike, not for nothing.
Thanks.
Summertime, Mike.
I know.
Come on.
Yeah, so.
Fucking sodas.
Again, messages, hope, promises, freedom, man. So I went in front of the fucking board. I got my license, all that. Started a business, got married, had some kids, many vacations, and
life is good, dude. Life is great.
Life is great.
And the thing is to thine own self be true. How do you feel about yourself? How do you feel about what you've done?
I feel great. I get up every day. I'm productive. You know what I mean? And I think that's a lot. So again, cannabis got a lot of stigma put onto it.
I don't think so. I think that stigma is gone. I think it's legal. I think people are doing it. Mothers and fathers allow their children to smoke. Look at the halls now.
Everyone's on Don and Suboxone. And
I can't do it, dude. No. I can't. A lot of the reasons I stopped doing the commitments was everybody was jammed.
Everybody was on fucking drug replacement therapy.
Yeah.
And you know what? A lot of them, you know, let's say they're on the subs, they're doing a quarter of them a day for a week, and then they're taking three of them because they want to get bombed. Like, we had a kid on last night who was on the clinic, you'd never know it, right? He's on 10 milligrams. He's on for a while, right? Never would have known, right? Yeah. But if he wants, he could go there every day. I feel like, up me 20. Sure. You go up to 240 milligrams where you're just...
I was on it three times.
Yeah, bombed. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah. I mean, there's, you know...
But again, Mike, listen, this is what we say.
Yeah.
Well, I believe the way I believe. Let that person believe their way. And then listen, when it's time, because I always say, listen, I do this recovery coach stuff. I have guys that are 10 times smarter than I'll ever be. They know all the answers and they're in detox twice a week.
Yeah.
I mean, so just to thine own self be true. When you're ready, you're ready.
I just want to be free. I don't want to have to get up and do something. I think, again,
at a certain point, it becomes quality of life.
Yeah.
But for some people, you never reach them. They can't be reached. They die young.
But I was in the throes of addiction. But I was that guy.
Yeah. That's an awesome story.
I was 32 when I got clean.
I was 43.
I was 32. And I was just done, man. 26.
I was
just done, dude.
I was 25 years old.
Yeah.
But, you know, I drank in jail a couple times. I did a couple things in jail a couple times.
You drank that fucking jungle juice?
I love that. I smoked K2.
I was on a roll for like six months. And listen, it made me see the worst of myself. Yeah. If you ask anybody that was in Danbury with me, they'll say, yo, that dude learned how to speak Spanish smoking deuce. Because I said it, I focused, I could listen, I could hear the TV. I was like, whoa. But it's just like every other drug.
Sure.
What it promises you at the beginning, it does the complete opposite at the end. That's how drugs are.
I think anything that you abuse is.
Okay. You know?
Because once you go into it, you know.
And we all have that addictive personality. Yes. If we do something, we're going to abuse it.
You know? Yeah.
Well, like, you know, speak for yourself.
Right? Speak for ourselves. Yeah. But, I mean, I think it's
like a Justin, characteristic. Right, Justin? Right. Justin takes a hit of the rock and forget it.
It's over. It's over. Right. He's looking for the rock he never dropped on the floor up here. Jess, what are you doing?
Well, like you said,
I throw it around the head flashlight.
Like you said, I don't. If things were the way they were 25 years ago, I might not feel this way. The way that I see it is a lot of mental illness. Is a lot of
Mike, you say that a lot, Mike.
A lot of fucking, lot of pharmaceutical fucking drugs, a lot of fucking chemicals.
Yeah, you know, seeing the residual effects now.
Listen, we grew up and we incorporated drugs into our lives to survive. We used them as a bartering tool, as everything. You know
everything,
what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. And
drug culture.
It's just not that way
today. I seen a great meme the other day. It said, Pfizer celebrating 75 years of not curing one illness. I loved it. That was great. Yeah, yeah. So they're celebrating so many years of not curing one illness.
So where, do you remember seeing me at the detox there, whatever?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
Vaguely.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, the Spectrum.
Yeah, we did a lot of commitments, man.
Yeah.
I did Spectrum. I did...
I was saying, wow, that kid got clean. You know, you were saying like, man, it had to be after you started your business, did it? I mean, I don't know when that was. That might have been.
No, I got clean in 2005, May 18, 2005.
So it was probably in the next 5 years after that somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe 2009. I mean, I don't know. It's
probably 2009.
No. I was locked up 2009.
10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. Yeah.
No, before.
Yeah.
Before that. Probably 2008.
No, maybe. Yeah, it could have been.
Fucking time flies, man. Man.
Even when you ain't having fun.
So the Ian Bick podcast.
Oh, yeah.
How much into it did you say, wait a minute?
So again, I was just scrolling TikTok. And so it's just clips.
Oh, you know what I mean? You weren't sitting there watching
the shorts.
It was one of the shorts. It was one of the clips you were talking about fucking Plymouth. He fucking looked at him. He goes, ain't that what the crazies do? And I'm like, yeah, we were fucking crazy.
That's awesome.
You know? Yeah, 100% we were fucking retarded, all of us. Yeah, we were fucking, like you said, in isolation down there, throwing fucking shit at the cops, eating fucking management loaf.
Like, Jay, I think about
those
days.
He was trying to get the wall pulled. Yeah, I was having a time.
This guy over there. I couldn't even imagine him back then. He's a fucking handful now. I mean, He'll call you up and say, you know what? This traffic is crazy. Forget these podcasts. You're doing the traffic. It's over.
So it became such a way of life that, you know, it was just fucking life. It was just, we would just catch
wreck. That was life,
It was, we would just catch wreck all day. We just made the best of shitty situations 100%. All the time. You know what I mean?
I think sometimes we made them too good. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
You know, the other people were in there like, man, I hate this place. You're like, yeah, man, toughen up. Like, you know what I mean? So
you did a stretch.
Yeah, well,
stretch. I did a little stretch on the installment plan. We were bouncing it out.
We all pay. We all come to terms with whatever our sentence is man, I can't do it. Even if it's a year and a half, you're like, man, I got kids, I got a job, you know. So whatever, we wrap our head around it, we do it. That's something, the common denominator we all have.
I got a couple of good friends that did a lot of fed time.
Yeah,
it's a lot of running to Paul Coteau.
Absolutely, Paulie. I know Paul, Rhode Island kid.
Yeah.
Great dude.
He's a Brockton guy, but he did 15 years down the ACI. Yeah. They actually just gave him $500,000.
Really?
Yeah.
I want to talk to him.
I think he's already, I think it's all gone.
Okay. Yeah. I like Paulie. I know Paulie.
So
Clotone.
I was in
good
the addiction
dude.
Center. When they came in, him, Teddy Sutherland, Joe Bradshaw.
Teddy Sutherland!
Joe Bradshaw. They all came in on that fucking case there, the mail case.
The mail case. Yeah. So Brad,
Paul Teddy Sutherland. Paul puts him on his knees. He fucking pulls
gun jams in the woods. I know. The fucking case. Oh, that's who that is. Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're all sitting there.
Now you right.
So listen, we're all sitting there, and I'm Teddy. Listening. I'm listening to this whole
fucking fresh air.
Yeah. I'm listening to this whole thing. It's me, Johnny Knapp, fucking Jimmy Wera,
Joe Brad,
Creedy McKean. There's a whole bunch of us, the old Brockton guys. They fucking rattled us all up, and then these guys came in, and they're all talking about their case, and fucking Jimmy Wera is just sitting over there fucking taking it all in. Dude.
Really?
He goes fucking 1-800-IPS. I got a live one.
Really?
Oh, man. Nobody knew nothing. And then I tell you, I end up down in fucking North Dartmouth because I was doing the whole fucking rip out thing.
Yeah. Bristol County. Yep.
So who's down in fucking Bristol County? Jimmy Wera. So Jimmy Wera's from my neighborhood. Grew up with him. Childhood friend. I fucking bunk up for him with the fucking past 9 months. We fucking in there, right? In the meantime, Coteau's in fucking in Plymouth fucking bouncing all over the place, getting all fucking banged up. And they finally send him down to Bristol County and put him in Max. So now he's sending word out from Max. Hey, tell Jimmy I got to talk to him because he must have got word. Yeah. And I don't know nothing.
Yeah.
Jimmy fucking wraps up. He leaves. He ends up, they were hitting him with a habitual. He fucking went in to rob the store with the fucking knife, and the guy fucking pulled the grate down and locked him in the store. So he climbed up in the fucking ceiling.
I love those videos.
He climbed up in the ceiling and then fucking fell in the next one. Anyways, so they're trying to give him 15 to life. So he tells on all of them, there's 2-3 years up in fucking New Hampshire. Anyways, they ship him out. They let Paul out in the population, so him and Stevie Dunn, they're over there like, what was he saying, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, fuck, dude, I have no idea.
Yeah,
he didn't say a fucking word.
You were living with the dude.
Fucking it's a nightmare. Jesus Christ, you know. But,
Teddy's our boy. We love Teddy.
Yeah.
We love Teddy.
Them guys
love
Teddy. I think those are the first guys to get natural life in the feds.
Yeah. But Teddy's out now.
Is he?
Teddy's out.
Yeah, yeah. Bradshaw, maybe.
Joe Brad's out.
Is he?
Brad's out too, Teddy, right? Don't talk to him. Yeah, Joe Brad.
Teddy don't talk to him?
No.
Yeah. It happens. Yeah. It happens.
Don't think it's natural.
But listen, I'm saying you definitely, that was.
That was 95.
Yeah, that was 96. That was my
first. I remember the federal appeal case. I forget what it was, but the judge. You know, we talked about this before, how they zing you in their wording.
Oh, they love it.
They said something.
However.
Joe Brad. They put something in the decision where they zinged them, you know? I remember one case. It was like this is what I'm talking about in the appeals court. They'll say things in the decision to, like, burn you. You know what I mean?
Listen.
And, they hear. And I remember one kid, he was a gang member and he smoked a couple of kids because he wanted to get his, whatever it was, like his props.
Sure.
Something with the gang. And they said, you know, we're going to, you know, deny it, you know, reaffirmed, you know. And then it says the defendant, you know, whatever, stays the same. He received his props from his gang and also a life sentence from the cop.
Hey, like, that's great. Listen, the best one I ever read was like, it was a stool pigeon got out on bail, right? And the guy said his defense was, I'm not a stool pigeon. We're on the same case. We got the same charges, but I didn't cooperate with the government. And this guy gets out, but I don't, on bail. And the judge says, you know, it's a meritorious argument and this and that. And he says, however, the defendant is fishing in an empty pond. That's a great one. Yeah. The defendant is fishing in an empty pond. Imagine, that's the biggest zinger in the whole world. Yeah, yeah. The guy's like, this guy's a fucking stupid.
Yeah,
we did the same exact thing, the same exact crime, same exact indictment. He just happens to want to cooperate with the federal government and he gets out, but I can't.
Yeah.
Fishing in an empty pond.
I heard Joe Brad's out. He's out now.
Good.
Teddy's out doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there are a couple
big of Teddy Sutherland fan.
Who did some.
Yeah, again, and the only one that I knew was Paul.
Yeah.
Paul Coteau.
I'm a big Paul Coteau fan, too.
Yeah.
From my neighborhood.
Like Paul. Yeah, Paulie's a great kid.
Great. Solid.
We had we were in Wyatt together.
Yeah, solid as they come.
Yeah.
We were in Wyatt, and then I think Plymouth, too.
He's so many good people.
Hey, he did 15 in fucking the ACI, dude. He's got the fucking prison walk.
Yeah. He's a convict.
Oh, yeah.
He's a convict.
Yeah.
Paulie Coteau. I haven't heard that name in God.
That's the only prison in Rhode Island, the ACI.
The ACI. Adult Correctional Institution.
And then, again, they gave him $500,000 for that case, man, for doing the 15 years. I know.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what the whip costs.
Yeah. Did you see that? I think that snap today. All right, we got to get going. I always got to try back to lull. Any closing arguments?
No, man, it's been an honor.
Yeah, it was awesome having you on. We haven't really got to talk in so long, but
keep trying to get you to fucking one of these fights or something.
Almost 30 years ago. Just May 10th, but now I think
so. My son, Caden McLeod, remember that name?
Yeah.
He's a boxer. He's got a fight Wednesday, a week from today, at Anthony's in Malden.
Oh, he's fighting there?
Yeah, you going?
Oh, yeah, we're there. Me and Mike are there.
When is he going to be there? Wednesday.
Charlie got us two tickets.
Wednesday, yeah,
it's a prime rib dinner.
Yeah.
It's by the Kiwanis. Yeah. That's Mike and Q's guy.
Yeah, my son's
fighting. Wednesday, let me. Ever tell you that?
Of course.
All right.
Come on, Mike. He's a convict. Guy's a convict, Mike. Come on. But we're going to go over there. We're going to go over there and eat, and then we're doing a podcast later, me and Mike.
Yeah. So, my son, that was his first fight, was actually on my birthday.
Mike. We'll see. You're going to be there?
I'm going to be there.
We'll see you there.
My family, my wife.
I tried the Capiello's. I remember those guys from Mickey and Dickie. They've been around forever. I thought your kid was fighting. I went all the way down.
And again, it got moved to the following week down in Rhode Island.
But they packed that place. What a good
yeah, they do a good
thing. Yeah. Me and Mike will be there.
So he trains up at Capiello's. Kevin Walsh fights out of Capiello's.
Yeah.
WBC featherweight.
I was supposed to go to it. And then I was
May
away.
10th, Foxwoods. Fuck. You know, I told him I'd give him a little shout out. Kevin Walsh. King Kevin Walsh. Yeah, kid's a beast. Yeah.
He's good. We'll see you there.
He's got three or four local belts, 17-0.
Nice.
Yeah, moving his way up, making a name for himself. Yeah, your boy Slane walked him out last time.
Oh, yeah, you told me that.
Yeah.
We're going to have Slane on.
Yeah, Slane's coming on. Yeah.
We're going to go do a commitment for him at Charles River.
Charles River, he's coming afterwards.
We're going to spend the day with him.
Another big recovery guy.
Yeah, great story, I hope.
Yeah.
You know? And then I think I'm going down to Nationals with Fippen. With Slane and Danny Boy O'Connor, who's got the Outsiders Museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I think I'm going down the first week in April. May.
I'll see you in Medellin.
All right, listen, I've been up too long. All right, that's it. Is it 49?
49 in the books.
Scotty McLeod, awesome, my guy.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Good stuff. Thanks for coming on. And what's the name of your company?
S. McLeod Electric.
S. McLeod Electric. If you need any electrical service,
hit me up.
Give my guy a call, and don't forget I get a piece. You get a referral code Bean Shooter.
25%.
Bean Shooter. If you're wearing a mask out there, the fresh air's gonna get you. He always shoots from the hip for iced coffee.